And now, it's time for the talk of the Northwest. The 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 5 minutes past nine on this Tuesday, the 9th of September. How are you all keeping? I do hope you're very well indeed, and it's great to be back. A big thank you to Michaela Clark, who sat in yesterday on the show as we made our way back from London. And we had a lovely show on Sunday. I enjoyed it anyway, and I hope it came across on the radio. We were on air between 12 and 2, and we chatted some amazing people over what is an amazing event. It's the Vintage Day in London over in Tyrconnell Gaels Football Ground. The weather was absolutely gorgeous. It's a lot of travelling, I have to say. We did travel an awful lot. A lot of time spent in taxis. Everyone in London is going somewhere but doing nothing, it feels like. Everywhere closes very early and people just are travelling left, right and centre, but not an awful lot happening either at the same time. But anyway, listen, we were very well looked after by Tiny Vaughan and all the crew over there. And as I say, if you want to listen back to that show, we'll try and get a podcast of it available for you in the not too distant future. It's great to chat to people from all over Ireland who have spent many years in London and have made London their home, but still continue to contribute to Irish life, both over there and over here. So, as I say, a lovely, lovely experience, but great to be home. Right, lots coming up on the programme today. So let's kick off with a look at the newspapers, and it's wall-to-wall presidential coverage. Of course, Fianna Fáil going to make their choice today. Sinn Féin, the speculation continues. Piers Doherty's name still in the hat yesterday. Mary Lou McDonald polled out. So there's plenty to talk about. The one thing I will say before I actually even get to that is I don't know the politics of those that are seeking nominations, but there are people from all over the country, including Donegal, that are going, travelling great distances and putting themselves in front of local authority members and explaining to them why they believe they should be nominated by they or them to run for the presidential election. And a little bit of, I don't know, there's a little bit of fun poking, I think, in some of the papers towards those people. But I don't know their politics, but I do know it wouldn't be me. And it takes an awful lot of a certain something to, I think, go to that bother and to go down there and say, this is why I believe I should. Now, I mean, obviously, some of them are more serious than others, I would presume, but I'd have admiration for their will to do it. As I say, that's not endorsing their politics or what they stand for, because I simply don't know. But anyway, housing costs drag 20% of children into poverty. This is one in five of our children. And why wouldn't you include housing costs? Because that is something we all face in one form of another. So one in five of our children are in poverty. That's as bad, almost as bad as it was during the recession. And here we are, apparently a very wealthy country. And we're told we're a wealthy country, and every indication that matters suggests otherwise. So one in five children in Ireland now lives in a family below the poverty line when housing costs are taken into account, according to new research from the Economic and Social Research Institute. It shows child poverty rates are now approaching the bleakest days of the economic crash, with many parents having to choose between food, clothing, lighting and heat as the cost of living crisis deepens. More than 225,000 children are now subject to income poverty after housing costs, the report notes. Now, think on their standard of life. Think on their standard of their gut health, for an example. I know parents will try their best, but if you have very little money, that's going to be reflected in what a child eats and all that type of stuff. So these could have lasting impacts, potentially. The research published by the ESRI and Community Foundation Ireland uses data from the Central Statistics Office survey on income and living conditions. It is the fifth such report from a research programme exploring the revolution of poverty, income inequality and living standards in Ireland. And we're heading into a winter, and I do worry about people's sort of anxiety levels and mental health levels, because we're heading into a winter now and there's not going to be any double payments of social welfare. There's not going to be any one-off electricity payments. And I just wish, you know, rather than maybe these universal measures that we introduced, if you could have, say, for instance, and I'm sure we could identify the 225,000 children's families, you know, and not increase child's benefit for everyone, maybe just focus it on they, so that they are brought up to an acceptable level, or target those people specifically with the electricity payments. You know, there's many people received them, didn't even need them, if the truth be told. Maybe I'm saying something controversial, I don't know. I just think if we could have got that money to the people that needed it, and many, many of them were in Donegal, because if you look at our statistics, if it's 1 in 5 nationally of children that are in poverty, I think it's going to be higher here. I think it's going to be higher in our county because of the level of income we have and the level of disposable income. And I just hope maybe over the last number of years we could have found a solution to make sure those who need the money most got it. But now that well apparently is one run dry and no one's getting anything now. But I mean, you know, it's a very personal thing if you're struggling. But maybe you are one of those families who are making choices over food, you know, power, heat, clothes, you know, and if you maybe want to help get the message across that there is that reality out there, because I read that article and it doesn't tell the full story, but if there's a person out there or persons who feel they're in that position and you want to speak to us, please feel free to do so. You can text us on 0860 25000 or call us on 07491 25000. And after speaking about something like that, this whole presidential race sort of becomes or feels irrelevant. Micheál Martin faces a referendum on his leadership as Fianna Fáil representatives take part in a vote on who to endorse as their presidential candidate. And it's interesting because this is exactly how I framed it when Micheál Martin instantly came out and backed Jim Gavin, and I knew there was a little bit of disquiet in the party. And what has effectively happened is he has forced a vote that effectively feels like a referendum on his leadership, because even if it's narrow, so say Gavin gets it over Kelleher by a handful of votes, that's, you know, over half the parliamentary party who are the decision makers, right, who would be in disagreement with Micheál Martin. Now, it might be spun to say that, you know, we're a party that allows free thinking and that's fine and all that kind of stuff. But the bottom line is this will tell us an awful lot as it relates to the popularity of Micheál Martin in Fianna Fáil, or at least the popularity of this decision. Well, barring any major upset, the former GEA manager Jim Gavin is expected to be chosen to contest the race for the Arras. But a strong showing by MEP Billy Kelleher, which I've just mentioned actually, would indicate dissatisfaction with the party leader who has staunchly backed Mr. Gavin. Now, as I say, it could be spun to say that this is just on this decision and not his overall leadership. But the Taoiseach has been contacting TDs over the last 48 hours in an effort to shore up support for Mr. Gavin. But there has been growing confidence in Mr. Kelleher's camp that the vote will be close, and while his chances of pulling off a stunning shock are slim, he will do far better than expected. And it's a private vote as well, so if I were a Fianna Fáil parliamentary party member, I could say to Mr. Martin, I could say, yes, and Micheál, of course, I'll back Gavin. But then when it came to the vote, I could go for my friend, Mr. Kelleher. So, as I say, there's still much to play for there. So, as I mentioned there at the top of the show, Mary Lou McDonald, I believe if I were advising her or them, has made the right decision. Mary Lou McDonald yesterday ruled herself out as Sinn Féin's nominee for president. Instead, the party leader said it was her priority to lead from the front in holding the coalition to account. Mary Lou said, I have concluded that the my role remains very firmly within the Dáil, leading this team of Sinn Féin representatives, but also working with others to ensure that the government is held to account in the here and now, and critically, to ensure that when it comes to the next general election, that there is a viable and real alternative government on offer to the Irish people. Well, she's got an awful lot to do to establish Sinn Féin as that, because I think a lot of listeners to this show, and I think it was particularly after the last general election or before it, and a few things that came about, a lot of people that listen to this show who aren't sort of big party supporters sort of group Sinn Féin now in with the current government, you know, in criticism. So Mary Lou McDonald has a lot to do leading that party to establish itself as a true alternative. But as I say, Piers Doherty's name is still being floated about. Maybe that's a good option for them. He can have a very successful campaign, even not win, and it doesn't necessarily damage the party or him. The Sinn Féin leader was asked if Northern Irish First Minister Michelle O'Neill, Donegal TD Piers Doherty, or Mayo TD Rose Conway Walsh could be the party's nominee. Instead, she said, you've mentioned some names of people whose names might be in the mix. There are potentially others, she said. Fine Gael are having their thinking. They're not back from the summer holly bobs yet, but they're having their thinking now. And a lot of the tension is on Tánaiste Simon Harris and his leadership of Fine Gael. And he said that he had to dig deep to show up at Fine Gael's annual thinking after multiple violent threats being made against him and his family. The party's parliamentary meeting in Mullingar yesterday had a large crowd of presences. Officers continue to investigate bomb threats at Mr. Harris's home in County Wicklow. And yesterday, Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald spoke about the unnerving experience of a man threatening to shoot her. Speaking at the Mullingar Park Hotel, the Tánaiste said the horrific threats are clearly being made to intimidate him out of public office. However, he would not confirm or deny whether he's reconsidering his role due to the harassment. He said, "I am not playing this game of yay or nay. Think how anybody would feel if in the last week somebody threatened to kidnap a child, carry out extreme violence against a close family relative and blow up your house. That's all happened in the last 7 days to me this time and to who next time. I'm not willing to gloss over the fact. I think that deserves reflection." And it's horrendous, actually. Whether you like or dislike someone politically, you know, the decisions they've made or don't make, or even if you don't like them personally, to be threatening people, to be threatening their family, to be threatening children is completely unacceptable. And if you really are opposed to Simon Harris or whomever it might be, it actually it causes great distress to them, but it actually also can harden support for them. So if your motivation is to try and drive them out, it can be counterintuitive, but it should never be an option. It's completely despicable. And, you know, play the man, not the ball, play the woman, not the ball. You know, kids, family members really should be completely and utterly off the table. Back to the budget. Budget 2026 is being planned, and whilst it's called Budget 2026, it will be unveiled this year. Sometimes I get confused about that myself, but it's the budget for, I mean, whilst some measures come into effect straight away, it is the budget for 26. Budget 26 is being planned without a clear roadmap for fiscal policy, the state's economic watchdog has warned. The Irish Fiscal Advisory Council has also recommended a reduction in the planned budget packet amid huge uncertainty. It said the planned package of $9.4 billion for the budget 2026 is not appropriate given the economy is still performing well. The watchdog has recommended a more restrained approach, which would help avoid overheating the economy and leave room to respond to future downturns. Because if you look at various indicators, so in terms of construction and building, there's a little bit of uncertainty there. If you look at investment into Ireland, it's slowing down a little bit. You know, there are businesses beginning to close. There are people who are starting to sort of say, you know, this isn't worth me staying in business. And I think we're going to see a bit of a rush in that. And just if you look at a few things around the place, for me, it points to, and then of course there's the global issues, it points to maybe things tightening even further in this country. And I think the government, whatever they're doing, need to be incredibly careful in that regard. It was very busy on the phone lines yesterday, of course. Some talk about diffing. There was diffing on the Derry to Bridgend Road yesterday, shortly after 1 p.m, diffing at the roundabout, and then they headed out to the Letterkenny Road. They seem to feel that they can do it without fear of being caught. Regards to the diffing, a box of roofing tacks thrown on the road will stop them. Stop all of us, though. What about policing? You know, what about having squad cars in the hotspots that can get in there straight away and apprehend these people? In relation to Fine Gael and their membership and the presidential election, I can't believe what I'm hearing from your Fine Gael councillor on the show yesterday. It's discrimination against the people by Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil. This is Fine Gael being told they must support Heather Humphreys under the whip. Another, any candidate that has anything to do with Fine Gael doesn't deserve a vote in the presidential election. The way they're running the country leaves a lot to be desired. And another, trying to justify the dictatorship but banding together to exclude someone who they think might have a strong chance of being elected. So I think various parties are employing different tactics in terms of whether their councillors can support candidates or not. And I'm joined on the programme by Kathleen Murray, founder of the Donegal SPCA. Good morning to you. Are you there, Catherine? Oh, Kathleen, I beg your pardon. No, I've lost Kathleen, but I do believe Dieter McMullen, director of the Donegal Animals in Need, is with me. Good morning, Dieter.
Good morning.
Thank you so very much for joining us. And we're reacting to really some quite sad news, the closure of a very important facility.
Very, very sad news, yes. It's a black day for animals here in Donegal.
So what is the impact of the closure of the ISPCA Rehabilitation Centre in Ballyar?
Well, the impact is that we are going to be left really stranded up here in Donegal. Like, that centre was built for animals in Donegal, and it's now going to be, I don't know if it's going to be sold or what's going to happen to it, but with the closure there, they currently have 7 staff on, and you can imagine how many animals them 7 staff would have been fit to look after constantly. As it stands now, ourselves, Animals in Need, and Twin Town Lost and Found Dogs in Stranola are going to be the only 2 charities that are going to be working with animals. You know, well, official animals, Donegal SPCA, they are rehoming. There's a lot of smaller, you know, private people doing it as well. But we are going to be the main ones. And, you know, we are all just staffed by volunteers, so we don't have paid staff on. So it's all volunteers giving up their own time. And, like, we have seen such an increase in calls over the last couple of weeks, and even the last week here since the closure has kind of become known, it has been absolutely brutal, the amount of calls. And, I mean, we cannot take them all in. We have been working at full capacity for so long as it is, and now with them not being fit to take any animals over there, it's devastating. It's devastating, and we know the losers are going to be the animals at the end of the day.
Well, what happens? Because, I mean, you can only do so much. You know, a team of volunteers running at capacity, it's going to break your hearts, and oh, because you're in the business of caring for animals. But what happens then?
Listen, it's going to be left up to the public. Mm. That's the only, like, I mean, anybody that, like, I mean, we've had to turn away a lot of calls here lately, you know, just simply because we don't have the space. Yeah. And, you know, people are going to have to just, you know, if they find animals, they're going to have to look after them till homes can be found. That's going to be the short and the long of it.
Yeah, let's bring in
because there isn't space. There isn't space, and there isn't volunteers for it.
Yeah. Let's bring Kathleen Murray in, who's the founding member, or a founding member of the Donegal SPCA. Your reaction to this news, Kathleen?
Well, this news is going to be like, it's going to put the county completely upside down. It's going to have a huge impact on animal welfare in the county, and the fear is that the future of the centre is very unstable at the moment, and we would like to have some kind of an agreement that the centre is going to remain for the animals of Donegal, because it was left to us through legacies to the Donegal SPCA, and that's why we built the centre as a legacy for the animals, so for they will have somewhere to go to be looked after, to rehabilitate and be rehomed or returned to the wild or whatever is necessary for them. And that's the function of the centre, and the people who left the legacies to us, that was our way of thanking them and providing a very long-term help to the animals. And so all of our money was sunk into the centre. And so it left us then that we had very little money, so we had to recoup when it was over because it was handed over to the ISPCA because they had money to run the centre at the time, and we didn't have enough to actually run it. But then it was basically, there's lots of meetings and lots of agreements that, you know, animals in Donegal would be prioritised and that the centre would always be there for the animals and things. And I tried to get some safety things put in place at the time, but in case the ISPCA ever went bust or whatever, and it was just deemed like not necessary at the time because nobody wanted to foresee that that would ever happen. But it's happened, and now they're merging with the DSPCA and handing over assets between them to each other, which includes the centre. And it has nothing got to do with the DSPCA because they're the Dublin SPCA. and we want that centre to remain in Donegal. So if it's not viably financially viable for them,
so what infrastructure is there, Kathleen? What infrastructure is actually there, and what is going to happen to it with this closure?
Well, what's going to happen to it is they're still in talks about what the future of it is. I've had emails with the ISPCA, and the future is still being discussed. They haven't decided on anything yet. And what's happening is the DSPCA will now also be involved. And who knows, they might decide to reopen it under the new national SPCA. But if it's not viable for them either, then it's up in the air. They could decide to sell it.
But it is a valuable asset, isn't it not?
It's a very valuable asset, because the legacies that were left to us were about, between the three of them, they were up on 800,000 more, actually. And it cost, like, it cost up on a million to build and outfit that building. So that's quite a handover to somebody for nothing, you know, in the faith, in the good faith that they would look after the animals of Donegal.
You would imagine if they had intentions, and I'm only speculating here, you'd imagine if they had intentions to continue it under a different organisation, that they would do that without a period of closure. Because obviously you'd hope in the business of looking after animals, the last thing you're going to do is, you know, leave that gap there for any period of time, if you have an intention to open it again under sort of a different leadership, or however you want to phrase it.
Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree with you. There's no need to close it at all. It could have been a smooth takeover if that was going to be the way it was going to go and remain in the county and be for the animals of the county mainly. It's not to say that we wouldn't have other animals come in, because they're a national organisation, but at least it's there for our animals, which is what it was intended for in the first place. And now that it's closed, that it's actually closed, the staff are out of jobs. And I mean, I really do have to pay tribute to Denise in particular, because she has been unbelievable in that centre. She actually lived with those animals for the whole duration of that time. And now, so she's out with her future up in the air as well as the others. And it's very difficult for them all, and there's no need to close it at all. It could have been kept going. So I don't know what the future is. I don't know. They're playing the cards very close to the chest. They're not saying. And then all of a sudden they announce that they have done this or whatever. But nobody ever rang us at any stage to say that this was even, that they were even in trouble, so that we could even try to support or run a fundraiser or anything. They just went ahead, did what they did, signed over what they signed over, and left us all now sitting here wondering what the future is going to be. But we really need this to work out for the animals, because the legacies were a huge amount of money left by people in good faith, and that needs to be honoured. If we can't honour that, what use are we?
Kathleen, what interventions required here now? I mean, obviously, as you say, the SPCA, DI, whichever it is, keeping their cards close to their chest. So, like, do you believe the council have a role in this? The government? I don't know. Like, what intervention might get some clarity for us at the very least?
Right. Well, the first thing that I think needs to be done is, I think the people of this county need to show support for the centre and for the animals, because it's absolutely needed in this county, and it's going to be a huge loss to the animals and to the people of the county. So I would encourage people, if they want to show their solidarity, want to show their support, that they show up maybe outside the centre on Thursday afternoon about 2:30, just to show that they are interested in what's going on, and they do want clarification, and they do want to know that the centre is going to stay in the county for the animals. And then it's up to the county to decide what to do with it after that, because the money will be staying on the county. But it's to get the ISPCA and the DSPCA to agree to that. That's where the problem lies.
Yeah, Dita, and you have to plan for...
They haven't decided yet.
Yeah, Dita, you have to plan for every eventuality, and that's why you're appealing for the community's help in this regard. And even actually coordinating that is a strain on the already stretched resources of the volunteers of AIN, but something has to be done.
Something has to be done, and you know, it will be down. Like, we're encouraging people to contact the Donegal County Council and just call for proper funding and support for the animal welfare services in Donegal, because we are going to need support. You know, we and any other charity, anybody else that works with rescues, are going to need support, because it is a major loss.
Yeah, Kathleen, you wanted to come back in there?
Yeah, I agree with Gitta because they're doing phenomenal work in the county. There's no doubt about it. And they need support. They need to have the centre as well going there because the centre has been, all of us have been working through the centre as well in one way or another, either sending people who are looking for dogs or referring them for whatever. And it's part of the setup here. And if it's missing, it's going to be a huge loss. And what's going to replace it? As I say, animals in need are going to be under phenomenal pressure. We're going to be under phenomenal pressure, as are the other registered charities. And the numbers are not decreasing in this county. It's going up and up and up. Mm. People are handing over dogs. People are handing over cats. I mean, the centre out there has dealt with more cats than any other centre, more wildlife than any other centre in Ireland. Mm-hmm. So this county needs this support, be it from the county council or be it from wherever. It needs to come and it needs to be real. People need to really start thinking about the future of it because it's going to be chaos here if that centre goes.
Ditta, you agree, I'm sure. Ditta, you agree
yes,
with Kathleen
hello,
there, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure you're agreeing with Kathleen there that something needs to happen and something needs to happen quickly.
It needs to happen quickly because there is, like, this is a busy time. Like, you know, I mean, since COVID, the dog situation has been at crisis. The dog breeding, the dog rehoming, it's just been at crisis. Never mind the cats. Like, we're the only rescue now that actually deals with cats, you know, that has any facility for cats. I know a lot of people take them in privately and all, you know, but we're the only ones that has any kind of facility at all for cats. And it's just, like, people don't understand about the neutering. Like, I mean, even if it was, you know, fund neutering campaign, anything at all from the council side, you know, will be called for.
Yeah.
And
okay.
It will be sooner rather and than later, like, you know, leaving it a year down the line. We saw what happened during COVID. Just that break in everything, it just was detrimental to the whole situation.
You wanted to come
and
in
also,
there, Kathleen?
Can I just say for a second? Yeah, just for a second. I was going to say, and volunteers are much harder to get now than they were years ago. Much harder. Everybody seems to want to get paid for stuff now. And volunteers are what runs it. And Gitta and myself and all the people of that generation that were involved in Donegal Pet Rescue and Animals in Need and Donegal SPCA, all the people of that generation are now getting older and not as able to cope anymore and getting tired. And we need young people coming in, coming up to offer their services, to offer their help and to offer to help fundraise. You know, we really do need that support. And that's why I would appeal to anybody who's interested in animal welfare, please get involved, please help out. Even if it's only to foster a couple of cats, even if it's only to foster a dog now and again or something, but please do get in contact.
And just to pick up on that, I think both of you are sort of seeing a gap in willingness of new generations coming through that will actually do this kind of work voluntarily in the true sense of the word.
Yes, absolutely.
Talk to me a bit more about that.
A big loss. It's a big loss. Like, you know, we do see that it's an older generation that's interested and that's willing to give up their time, as Catherine was saying there. You know, people are struggling. The money isn't there. People have to get paid for their work. Like, people are working flat out. So it's not just as much of a willingness. Like, it's just that they're not able to work voluntarily.
Yeah,
you know, but we would be in desperate need of volunteers. Like, and I know other charities, it's the exact same thing. They all need volunteers.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, listen. I mean, obviously, we've heard kind of the union angle on this, and what have you, and of course the impact it has on workers, and that's very, very important. It's interesting to get both your perspectives.
Absolutely.
In relation to the animal welfare side of it. The situation Thursday afternoon, Kathleen, you mentioned at 2:30. Has that been arranged, or did you just throw that out there because there's people inquiring as to you know, what's going on Thursday?
Yeah, just to meet down at the gates of the centre on Thursday, and I'll be there, and hopefully other animal charities will also come and support it, and as many people as possible to show their support and show their solidarity in working for the animals of Donegal, and just to be there to show that we're serious. We need this to stay in the county. This was left to us. This is our legacy for animals, and we really need it.
All right.
Belongs to the animals of Donegal. Yeah.
And Ditta, so and the people, and the people who banked it as well. Ditta too,
and
finally, you know, we have to reiterate, and the message has never been more important now, don't take on pets that you can't look after. You know, absolutely. If you have pets that need neutering, get them neutered, find a way to do that, because, you know, we're facing down the barrel potentially of having not enough facilities for what might be required. So responsible ownership's never been more important, especially as we head towards Christmas, etc.
Yes, absolutely. That is true.
Mm-hmm. Okay, both
no
of you.
No argument there.
Yeah, both of you. Thank you very, very much indeed. I greatly appreciate your time, and we'll cover this, of course, into the future. On Friday, you would have heard that SIP2 urged Agriculture Minister Martin Hayden to intervene in the situation surrounding the closure of the ISPCA's rehabilitation centre in Balliol. The union has been involved in discussions within the association about its plans ahead of a forthcoming merger between the ISPCA and the DSPCA. And what we don't really know is exactly what's going to happen. You know, in terms of obviously great concern for people's jobs, because they are very committed to what they're doing as well, but also in terms of having facilities for animals. A caller says, and it's a brief one, every pet owner needs to step up here. Yeah, indeed. And I think that kind of falls under the conversation or suggestion I had that, not the suggestion, it's an obvious thing, that we have to be extra vigilant in terms of pet ownership, or whether you've got a cat that could end up having seven or eight kittens that somebody else is going to have to deal with. All right, anything to say in relation to that? 086 60 25,000, 086 60 25,000, or call us on 074 91 25,000. All right, you're very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We're joined on the programme now by Councillor Paul Canning, Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council. Good morning to you, Paul. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning, Greg. How are you? Good morning to your listeners.
Right. Now, the conversation of rail back up and running again. What's your feelings on the possibility of rail ever being restored to our county? Or I was going to say our lifetimes, but that's, we don't know how long that might be. So let's stick to just open-ended timelines.
Yeah, well, open-ended timelines would be a bit right. It's all, as you well know, it's all about linkages to our capital city and to the major cities. So we are in the process, but we're a long way off. In relation to where we're at the minute, we are concentrating, you know, the map that's always rolled out. showing Donegal and the north. The Northwest is having no linkages. So at the minute, we are working with Derry and Strabane Council to progress the link that takes Derry to Portadown via Strabane, Newton's, you know, that old link down Strabane, Newton Stewart, Dungannon, and across to Portadown. That will link us then to Newry to start linking the Northwest, and then at a future stage, then we are linking the Derry to Letterkenny. But that's, we're chatting, you know, the dates that has been pointed there, the Derry to Portadown is a 2040 timeline, and the Letterkenny one is a 2050 timeline.
Yeah, but why can't we? Of course you can, but why can't we crack on with it? Like, say, for instance, there's a brand new road that hopefully will eventually be built to the border. Should we not be incorporating space alongside that road for this potential rail line, so that we're not going back through the whole planning process once again? I mean, would that not be a logical thing to be doing now, to ensure that we take enough land whilst we're building a new road to the border to accommodate this rail line? That's the type of forward planning, surely, that could make this more deliverable in a more timely fashion.
To a point. The situation with railway, the landscape and the topography is different for a railway line as for a road. So you have heights and hollows that a railway line can't perform on to the same extent as a road. So a lot of the time, the road, if you were to try and build a railway line along a road, then you're taking a road and a different route to suit the railway line, which is not viable a lot of the time. So we have to, you know, as much as we're doing directives and habitats and protection of this and protection of that as assessments, we have our route selections a lot of time will be different, and you'll discover that in a lot of it's different out middle Europe where we're not full of drumlins. So that's the situation we are in. So we're linkaging in relation to the Port of Down and to Derry that we met with Liz Cummins on Thursday about, and the government on there have given 300,000 for the feasibility and all of that study to be done. We're hanging on to that same hook as Donegal for Letterkenny to Strabane to Derry, So that's where we're at. But we're very early stages, Greg, at this stage of the game. But our route will probably still have to go, something similar to where it used to be along the St. Johnson direction, because of the flat land that's there.
I just feel that those timelines could be more favourable if there was a proper political will there, Paul. And there are a lot of people that for them we're talking about something for 2050 and they don't believe it to be the right idea. Should we be going down the West Coast? Should we be trying to hook into Sligo? Would that not be suit more people, suit more of the county, be more practical? Like, are we putting all our eggs into to the wrong basket?
Well, you see, as you always know, there's always a study about everything, so there was a study done, and it's based on this. It was an all island strategic rail review that was done, and this is what came out of it. This is the front runner that came out of it. Now, within that same rail review, they didn't actually, the West Coast link along the Atlantic corridor, for a better word, the Derry to Letterkenny to Sligo to Galway to Limerick. We have to work, be positive and be supportive of that. But as a direct link, it's a low hanging fruit if we try to connect to the Northern Ireland rail network, as to try and go down the coast, because it's Dublin that we need to be linking to as much as anywhere else, So we need to be linking there first. Mm-hmm. And also, listen, be going the West Coast as well. But we have so much linkages to do because we have so little up here.
It's not fantastic positive interview. I think it's just a reality check, and that's not, I'm not putting that on you. We're speaking in reality. I don't think I will ever get onto a train in Letterkenny ever, and that's just the fact, and that's if I were to live to 100. But anyway, 70 of your party colleagues have a vote today, Gavin versus Kelleher. Which, you don't have a vote, which way would you be voting?
Well, I don't know. Am I allowed to sit on the fence?
Not really.
I'll tell you what, I met Jim Gavin. He was up in Letterkenny and he met a number of us. And because and the whole county knows how strong I'm affiliated to the GAA, I hardly knew the man, we met him, and a very, very down-to-earth man, and was, looking for advice and looking for, a way forward. And what struck me about him, he asked me, I said, I'm the wrong person to ask, because I'm 15 years in politics and I'm still not a politician, because I don't know the ins and outs of it. And I said, I'm the wrong person. But what struck me about him, he didn't land and said, I'm Jim Gavin and I'm the Dublin manager and I'm this and that. He was very down to earth. He spoke about his father driving a lorry and then driving a CIE bus. And he spoke about his mother being a teacher and struggled to put them through the whole process. And also, whenever we went into discussion about, the troubles far off, the Palestinian, all of that, he was able to say that he wore the blue helmet. He was one of the soldiers that was on the ground, so very down to earth.
But then
very
you've
nice
got
man,
one of
quiet.
Your own in Billy Kelleher, who's, given his life to the party. He's very popular. He's been out representing Fianna Fáil in Europe as well. And he's also looking, for one of those, for all of those or many of those 70 votes. So, Do you?
Yeah.
Which way would you go if you had to get off the fence? You know, I mean, do you back one of your own guys, or do you back someone outside the party?
Well, you see, we asked him about the being outside the party and all of that aspect of it, but because the role that he had within the aviation, and I see it in relation to here, where we have senior officials working in senior posts that can't declare their allegiance to the party because of the role that they hold within their particular employment. So to say that he was outside of the party mightn't be the right language. He just couldn't show his colours.
Right, so you're not going to say one way or other, and that's fine. It's up to you. Conor McGregor, do you think he'll find a pathway to the presidency? He's written a letter to the CEO. He says he believes now is the time for an independent, people-first voice to enter the IRS. He says you might not necessarily have to agree with what he stands for, but getting him onto that ballot paper would be a stand for democracy, fairness and representation. Do you think he will get... Well, will he get it in Donegal? No, probably not, of course. Or you wouldn't know.
The situation with it sent... A few days ago, we had sent a letter request through to my email. We have about probably 15 people now on the ballot paper, are going to be on a ballot paper for the purpose of selection, to be given the opportunity to run. I agree with the democratic process and how it works out, and how everybody has the right to listen, to put their name forward, and anybody that does put their name forward, fair play to them to put their neck out there, as in all political posts, you know. So listen, it's open to anybody to put their name forward. They have to be a certain age, but it's getting on the ladder.
And have you scheduled your meeting yet, Paul? Because I presume you'll have a meeting
We will be scheduling a meeting now. I'll be speaking to the council officials and that, and we will probably more than likely have a meeting probably early part of next week to give an opportunity to people.
And then what's the process then, Paul? Sorry, pardon my ignorance. What's the process then? So, yeah, you give them 5 or 6 minutes each. I'm not sure McGregor would actually turn up, but anyway, we'll wait and see. You give them 5 or 6 minutes each, and do we know what the process is after that as to whether or not they get an endorsement?
Well, just going on Kerry's performance, they brought everybody in, and they gave them all 5 minutes each, you know, to address the councils. Now we might go in a different process because of our location, because of time frame, and because of these guys are on a tight schedule. So there might be a process maybe available for them that they can do an audio online and send it to.
I don't know if they seriously, if they can't make it up to Donegal seeking your support, how can you back them? That's the whole idea, that we're too far away for crying out loud.
Yeah, but that's, you know, it's we have to give them options, and also if you're sitting listening to 15 people in the chamber telling you the same story, it'll be difficult. It'll be hard to decide just there and then. So we need to make the most of our time as well whenever you would be presented, because you don't want to be coming back two or three times to
vote. Are you on a whip in Fianna Fáil, or would you be able to vote freely?
Well, I don't like the word whip, but
you're told by the party HQ whether you can actually back someone or not. I mean, it's, you know, I'm not saying you're hoarse.
In relation to that, you know, we're not in a WAP, but even if we were in a WAP, you know, it's an easy, you know, and I know the next question you're going to ask me is going to be in relation to Fine Gael. We'll just take it to if Michael Murphy, for instance, GAA, decided to go out on a solo. We wouldn't be winning a pile. He might have a good game, but he's part of a team. And just in relation to Fianna Fáil, in relation to Sinn Féin, in relation to Fine Gael, we are part of a team. And that's probably the success that we do have, that we are a team. We are a team because we can't, you know, if you're going to be the team and the team. And Fianna Fáil hasn't got the whip on, but in relation to Fine Gael that have the whip on, they're part of a team, and you know they
well,
it's very easy.
They, like, yeah, they can do whatever they like.
Yeah,
as well.
Listen, you know what I mean.
Thanks for covering that range of subjects. I do appreciate it, but time has caught up on me. Paul, thank you very much indeed, Councillor Paul Canning, there, who is the Cathaoirleach of Donegal County Council.